Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wow, Matt, fellow adventurers. Once again, we are playing as Sir Croakington, and currently, we are in the dungeons under the Tower of Thalberic, which we discovered because we found out there was some tussle on Hawkrest Island, and we went down there to see what they're up to. And we met up with a Catamok Rage for Calmwreck, and it turns out the Tazal are in pursuit of an incredibly powerful book which will allow them to do a genocide. Well, a genocide even more than they were previously doing. And so we're going to stop them. And also, along the way, they'll cause a lot of damage here. So we got, Calamorek has told us how to get deeper into this place to track down the Tazul Lawmord Gargarak. Was it here? At a bend in the passage, you spot a cleverly concealed lever set into the east wall. This is in the northeast corner of this section. The stone shaft is almost indiscernible from the wall around it. Pull the lever. You take hold of the stone lever and pull it. When the lever is far down as it will go, you release it and watch as it slowly returns to its original position. Suddenly, a low rumble, originating from somewhere to the west, echoes along the passage. Let's go west. Oh, there was something new there in the little alcove we found in the previous episode. You're at the top of a set of winding steps that ascend into a lower level, underground level of the ruined tower. Descend the steps. Okay, well, I'm in the southwest corner of this section, and to the east, there's a little alcove. Just to the north of the east. Torches and lamps affixed to the walls at infrequent intervals cast dim, flickering light, incapable of adequately illuminating these ancient passages. Well, I guess we should be glad that there's any light at all, but I guess the Tazal probably had to light some lamps while they were searching this place. So it's not actually these lamps that have conveniently been lit for thousands of years thing that you often end up with in dungeons. This is more lights that were conveniently lit by the people we're trying to stop, who are also exploring this dungeon and, you know, rely on sight to see to some extent. I mean, if we were dealing with a race of dog aliens, they probably wouldn't really need to light the lamps because they don't really rely on sight that much. But we haven't seen any dog aliens. There's probably somewhere in the Nevelus. Okay, and what's the Nanoth? A square impression is sent into the centre. Set into the centre of an iron plate, affixed to the wall at the back of this small empty chamber. Several arcane symbols are engraved around the edge of the plate. Well, let's go use that square copper medallion again. You press the copper medallion to the square impression. For several moments, nothing seemed to happen. Then, suddenly, a distant, muffled clattering reaches your ears. Uncertain what has just occurred, you remove the medallion, step back from the iron plate. Okay, that's probably done something. I'm making my way east and then north. Okay, that I've seen. Now I can see the whole of this section. It's another square area, but with the northwest and the northeast sections tucked in a bit. And in the very north is a dial. A pair of towering iron doors are set into the north wall in this section of the corridor. To the right of the doors, protruding from an iron plate affixed to the wall, is a row of seven stone dials. Okay, these are the dials that Kalmorak told us what to set to, so we can finally get to the lowest level of this dungeon, stop Galgrimrok and kill him, rescue Kalmorak, and generally just save a whole load of people. I mean, presuming Kalmorak is telling us the right thing. I mean, I'm assuming as much, because I tend to trust people who've been imprisoned and roughly treated, because presumably the people who put them there are bad guys. But as I say, we can't be entirely sure, but I'm trusting him to be roughly right. Examine the dials. The dials appear to be able to be turned to display a number of different engraved image. You study the images currently displayed, glancing from left to right across the row of stone dials. Adjust dial 1 displays a mountain. Only with great effort are you able to turn the stone dial, and even greater efforts for Sir Croakington, who is small, except when, of course, it's convenient for Sir Croakington to be otherwise. Recalling what Kalmorak told you, the dials should be set to display a dragon. Then I'll do that. You turn the dials to display a dragon. Dial 2. Right, that's the same. That should be set to display a dragon. And I set it to display a dragon. And 3. That should be to moon. And I'll set it to a moon. And 4. That should be set to helm. And I set it to helm. And 5. Be set to shield. I set it to shield. And 6. Moon. Set it to moon. And 7. Currently a dial. Should be set to star. Set it to star. Suddenly, with a loud shriek, you know, considering all the what's it? It's 7. What is 7 to the power? 7 to the power of 7 different options. Alright, what is 7 to the power of 7? Okay, the total amount of different options there is 823,543. So it's pretty much functionally unsolvable unless you know how it works. Admittedly, if you are willing to, well, let's see, let's assume it takes 10 seconds. Okay, let's assume it takes 10 seconds to try out an option. Okay, I think I might be being generous there. Alright, 10 seconds. Alright, so we divide that by, alright, so that's 10 seconds, alright, divide by 3,600, that's the number, alright, I might be doing this, anyway, it's a long time, I'm sure someone could work it out, but I don't feel like doing it right now. A loud shriek, followed by a series of shuddering groans, fills the corridor as the towering iron doors slowly swing open, revealing the black, spinning core of a portal. Now, presumably, we know that Galgarat got in here because he tortured the answer out of Kalmorak. But he's still got to, you know, find the book. And maybe there's some more puzzles there he has to solve. But it won't take him long, because this is the big puzzle. This is the hardest part to get past. And if there was any particularly hard parts he had to get past, beyond that, he'd have gone, he'd have tortured that out of Galgenweck as well. Or Galgenweck would have told him, because he said, okay, if there's any more puzzles I have to get past, you know I'm just going to come right back here and torture them out of you. So you might as well tell me now. Because I'm going to torture you, and I'm going to kill your family, and then I'm probably going to torture your family before I kill them. I'm going to burn the things you like and do all sorts of nasty things. So you might as well just tell me. Alright, let's step into the gate. In the space between the parted, imposing barriers is the inky, churning core of a magical gate. Step into the gate. You boldly step into the portal and instantly find yourself once again standing in a dimly lit stone passage, nearly identical to the one you just left. You look behind yourself and are surprised and somewhat dismayed. Discover there is no sign of the gate through which you stepped only a moment ago. Now presumably, as is always the way in these dungeons, there is some way here to get to... There is something I can do here to set up a portal back. Because there always is. And... And also, Kalmarek wouldn't be worried about Gargamorek if it was a one-way portal. She was just saying, little does he know, he's stuck there. I just have to wait for him to die. But anyhow, I'd probably die first, so could you get me some medical stuff? And that's your quest, which isn't really as exciting. So, all right, got to find Gargorak. All right, I'm in the northeast section of this dungeon now. All right, this dungeon. It seems to be there's a square on the eastern side, but the very southeast corner is missing. I'm making my way east. The bloodied, mangled corpses of several Tazar lie sprawled out before an alcove set into the southern wall of the passage. The statue of an armoured warrior, his chain-clad hands gripping the hilt of a large sword, fills the alcove. Of course, there's some sort of guardian statue magic thingy. A small diamond-shaped piece of copper, glowing faintly, is set into the statue's neck. Suddenly, the sound of splintering stone fills the corridor as the statue steps out of the hollow and moves into the centre of the passage. With its lifeless gaze seemingly fixed on you, the figure of stone stands silent and motionless. So, I've got some options. I can attempt to move past the statue, attack the statue, or retreat west along the passage. I don't particularly have any reason to go along this passage, but I'm just going to assume I have to. So attempt to move past the statue. As you attempt to move past the statue, the sword-wielding figure of stone steps forward and slashes at you with his deadly blade, picking a number, a bonus of 30, 20 from agility, 10 from luck. Got to get 50 or more, or it will get the first hit in. Pick now! 100, success. You nimbly spring above a trio of the statue's deadly stripes, but ultimately first to drop back beyond the range of its frenzied attack. Realising it's much too dangerous to attempt to move past the statue, you swiftly retreat along the passage. Okay, sneaking won't work. It must be a very observant statue if it can even see Sir Croakington, who is small, as I've mentioned many times. After covering nearly a dozen yards along the corridor, you turn and glance back at the statue. In the dim light of the passage, you can see the sword-wielding figure of stone as it steps back into the alcove on the wall from which it emerged. Okay, now let's try something else. Okay, just attack it. Oh, wait, what if I use the square copper medallion? Nope, can't do it. Attack the statue. Determined to get past the statue, you boldly move in, narrowly dodging a stripe of its deadly stone blade. As you prepare to launch your attack, it's a sword-wielding statue. Okay, it's black difficulty. I think this is one of those things you're not supposed to fight. Or, because especially considering Sir Crokington has an MR of 382, which was an MR which was pretty much impossible for anyone but the most donatee of donators to donate their way to when this adventure was released. So this is that gem. Most of the time, if you see something that's black difficulty, it's a sign this is not a fight you're supposed to do, or you're fighting this adventure well out of order. Do something else and come back. Except, of course, in the battleground, you'll eventually reach back difficulty, but that's usually a sign you've gone as far as you can go. Bow out. There's really not... I mean, you'll still get your bowl of blood, because that's... Unless you're obsessed with getting as far as you can... That's the main benefit to the battleground challenges. Anyway, fight. I got to begin combat. I have no other option. Kill your enemy. What? I'm doing some damage. Okay. What if I use the wand of dragon fire? A deafening roar fills the air as a powerful breath of fire explodes from the tip of your iron wand. The enemy, consumed by the ravaging flames, taking 113 points of damage. Okay, that's quite a lot of damage. And the enemy deals you a devastating blow for 20 damage. Alright, you know what? I'm going to try the power of destruction. Neverall Energy Blast. Alright, 48 damage. You unleash a powerful blast of negative Neverall energy at your foe. 48 damage. Again, 47 damage. 54 damage. 54. 35 damage. 43 damage. It's nearly done. 45 damage. 57 damage. And one final blow for 41 damage. You have slain your foe. 141 damage. Most of it going to necromancy. You step back from a heap of rubble at your feet and wipe away the sweat streaming down your brow, because in this game there are various ways to cheese your way past foes that are way stronger than your melee waiting. You can just blast it with magic, you have the wand of dragonfire, you have the finger of dread, you have the blessings of protection to protect you from a little bit of damage. And there are probably others. Oh, there's Tally's Echoing Whisper, but that's 10 times across your entire character. You step back from the heap of rubble at your feet and wipe away the sweat streaming down your brow. After taking a few moments to check over your equipment while you recover from the brutal fight, you once again prepare to set off along the passage. Okay, a heap of shattered stone in the centre of the passage is all that remains of the sword-wielding statue you encountered here. Now let's see what it was defending. Go east. The bloodied, mangled corpses of several Tazar lie sprawled out before an alcove set into the southern wall of this passage. The statue of an armoured warrior, his chain-clad hands gripping the hilt of a large sword, fills the alcove. A small, diamond-shaped piece of copper, glowing faintly, is set into the statue's neck. Suddenly, the sound of splintering stone fills the corridor as the statue steps out of the hollow and moves into the centre of the passage. Oh, it's another one of those. With its lifelike gaze seemingly fixed on you, the figure of stone sends silent moments. Well, I attacked the first one and it turned out okay. I'm going to attack this one. Determined to get past the statue, although I'm not sure to what, if anything, you boldly move in, narrowly dodging the swipe of his deadly stone blade as you prepare to launch your attack. Sword-wielding statue. Okay, negative Neville Blast. Yep, okay, this is the same as the last one. Just blasting it with powerful magic before it can take me out. The statue swipes you with a stone blade. And it is slain. Another 141 XP. You step back from the heap of rubble at your feet and wipe away the sweat streaming down your brow. After taking a few moments to check over your equipment, while you recover from the brutal fight, you once again prepare to set off along the passage. Okay, it turns out there was nothing there. Or at least, nothing I can see yet. Oh well, maybe it'll make more sense later. Okay, now I'm going north. North from where I entered. You're taking only a few steps away from the junction passage when you suddenly find yourself confronted by three scimitar-wielding Tazol, the vicious reptilian trio, their blades glittering in the pale, flickering light of a nearby torch. Sliver forward and attack. You boldly meet the attack of the first Tazal, now defiantly countering the hissing, wedge-scaled foe's savage assault. I'm guessing that the corridors here are narrow enough that they can't just all attack me at once. Or at least these extra chunky Tazal can't. Maybe regular Tazal could, because they're not nearly as big. Begin combat with the elite Tazal warrior. The Tazal warrior slashes at you with the scimitar, and also its scimitars. I don't think they're well designed for fighting in close formation. Although I wouldn't know, I've never tried. Maybe Shadiversity could tell you. Slashing at you with his scimitar. And you have slain your foe. 13 XP. The slain warrior collapses into a heap on his floor, his scimitar slipping from his clawed hand, landing with echoing clacks on the cold stone. You leap over the bloodied remains of the first Tazal and brazenly engage the closest of the two remaining reptilians. Alright, slashes at you with his scimitar. Savage blow for 9 and 6 and 9 damage, and you have slain your foe. 13 experience. The enchantment of metal helped you avoid one more of one. Very nice. The Tazal warrior collapses into a heap on the floor, his scimitar slipping from his clawed hand and landing with an echoing clatter on the cold stone. The last of the three Tazal, seemingly unaffected by the deaths of his two cohorts, I guess he is, but he's not letting it show because these warriors have a lot of discipline. But not very much intelligence, because surely they know they're doomed. Now as his blazing yellow eyes and surges at you, his deadly blade poised to strike. Well, you'll go down too. Slashes at you with his scimitar. I mean, maybe you should try some other weapons. I mean, they won't help, but you don't know that. You have slain your foe. 13 XP, the Tazal warrior collapses onto a heap on the floor, his scimitar clattering from his clawed hand and landing with an echoing clatter on the cold stone. 64 XP to General, with the four corpses of the three Tazal lying strewn across the breadth of the passage, you step back and endeavour to catch your breath as you check over your equipment. Having recovered from the brutal fight, you make a quick search of the slain reptilians and discover only their three scimitars. They're all sturdy. I'll take the lot of them. Alright, that brings my encumbrances up to 81. I now have 11 sturdy scimitars and 6 well-crafted scimitars to sell later. Wary of lingering here any longer than absolutely necessary, he promptly set off along the corridor, okay, making my way north, and then east. The bloodied, mangled corpses of several Tazar lie sprawled out across an alcove set into the northern wall of this passage. Looks like you've lost most of your men, Gargorak, trying to get past these statues. Well, that's probably a good thing, because the less men he has, the slower he will search for the book, and the slower it will take him to, and the harder it will be for him to get past whatever traps remain. Now, I admit, I think I'd know if Gargorak was one of those people. Also, if Gargorak had gone and got himself killed, which is not the sort of thing you do when you're a commander. You have soldiers for that. It's their job to die, trying to get past a trap that ultimately you don't think they can, but you might as well. But you might as well try, because you can always just gate back to your own world and get more soldiers, presumably. Yes. Gripping the hilt of a large sword fills the alcove. A small, diamond-shaped piece of copper, glowing faintly, is set into the statue's neck. Suddenly the sound of splintering stone fills the corridor as the statue steps out of the hollow and moves into the centre of the passage, its lifeless gaze seemingly fixed on you. The figure of stone stands silent and motionless. Alright, I'm just going to attack it again. It's the same as the other ones. It's 18 plus difficulty. I'm not sure what its MR rating is. Maybe it's on the wiki, but I'm not going to bother to find out. Sword wielding statue. Negative memorable blast. Just going to keep devastating blows for 27 damage and then some more damage before that. Alright, use a quick stone 20. That only does 10 damage. It's really not worth doing when it's an 18 plus foe. Alright, I'm going to do some healing now. Hand of healing. Telekinetic. No, I don't want a telekinetic blast. I want a Neverwar Energy Blast. The battle wage helps, but not much. Or it would, if I actually do any damage. Negative Energy Blast. 60 damage. It is slain. Good job, I have so much Neverwar Reserve. 141 XP. You step back from the heap of rubble at your feet and wipe away the sweat streaming down your brow, and a couple of quick heals to bring me back. Sweat streaming down your brow. After taking a few moments to check over your equipment, while you recover from this brutal fight, you once again prepare to set off along your passage. Now, the thing is, in this game, there is no way to restore your Neville Reserve outside of West. Or at least, none that I can think of. I think maybe there's some things that restore you a little bit in a dungeon, but I can't think of anything. I mean, you can temporarily boost your Neville Reserve by equipping equipment that boosts it, and then switch to the regular stuff as you go through the boost. That can get you a bit more Neville Reserve, but once you run out, you're run out. Which means a very long dungeon can just deplete you. Just go through all your resources and leave you with nothing. But admittedly, I could just not fight these impossible statues. Set off along the passage. Okay, go east. Oh, it's another one of those statues. Just going to fight that. Neverwar Energy Blast. Just blast through these. Blast. Slain. Alright, that was 11 Neverwar Reserve to get through those. So I can take about 4 more of them. And still have enough Neverwar Reserve to heal from regular fights. 141 experience destruction. You step back from the heap of rubble at your feet and wipe away the sweat streaming down your brow. After taking a few moments to check over your equipment while recovering from the brutal fight, you once again set off along the passage. Right, go east. Okay, I seem to have got past all these statues. Okay, go south. A diamond-shaped impression is set into the centre of an iron plate to fix the eastern wall of this passage. A number of arcane symbols are engraved along the edge of this plate. Okay, use the square copper medallion. 64 XP to general. You will take your square copper medallion and place it into the diamond-shaped impression. Somewhere far off to the west, a sharp crackling sound reaches your ears. A strange sound lasts for only a few moments before suddenly falling silent. You suddenly take note of a soft golden glow emanating from the medallion. Before you can study it more closely, the glow fades. Okay, that presumably helped the medallion unlock something somewhere. Uncertain what has just happened, you remove your medallion, step back from the wall. Okay, go south again. Okay, I'm very close to where we fought the second of those super tough statues. Okay, I've explored the eastern part of this northwest section now. Alright, making my way west. Your movement along the corridor comes to an abrupt halt as a crackling field of golden energy, golden, like the glow of my medallion, suddenly appears, spanning the entire path. Suddenly, you suddenly notice that the square copper medallion you're carrying is bathed in a soft golden glow. Before you can examine the object more closely, you're startled by a series of sharp crackles. You instinctively throw your gaze in the direction of sound. Discover, much to your surprise, the energy barrier has vanished. Well, that's nice. Okay, there's a southern passage to the western part of this section. But apparently that was crackled off with the first time. Alright, now we're on an eight-shaped part of this dungeon. And there's a question mark in the northwest corner. Alright, I'm just exploring all the other pits. I'm near the southwest corner. The passage suddenly widens as your eyes immediately settle upon an unnerving scene. Several yards ahead, his clawed hands resting on the surface of a large stone orb that looks like a magey thing to do, and his broad, flat-head bowed, is a large, webbed-scale Tzaal. A heavy, double-bladed axe is slung across the reptilian's rigid back. Even at this distance, the wagged echoes of a shrill hiss serve to fill you with an inexplicable sense of dread. You immediately realise this is Gwargwynoc, the axe-wielding Tzaal described to you by Kalmorek. The reptilian appears to be attempting to summon some sort of magic. These large eyes open and close almost rhythmically, and amidst his incessant hissing, you hear him making low utterance in a strange foreign tongue. I mean, why would he speak? Why would he use our tongue? There's no reason to do that. I mean, our tongue is stupid and has all the wrong words in it and sounds utterly barbarian. Probably. I mean, to him. Certainly, he has not yet taken notice of you. You're about to steal forward when a sharp sound of splintering stone fills the corridor. The cracks spanning the surface of the stone orb widen, and a pale white light sweeps out of the massive sphere. Okay, I think... Is this where the book's hidden? Gargamel removes his hands from the orb and grasps as the light pouring out of the object rapidly twists itself into the glowing apparition of an elderly man. Alright, okay. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I think it might be bad in the end. Your eyes were immediately drawn to the ghostly figure's hand. Clutched tightly by all 10 of his long, glowing digits is a massive tome. Oh no. This is the tome. The tome that we cannot allow Gargomak to get. Gargomak, who retreated several feet upon the sudden appearance of the spirit, slithers forward and in a snarling tone demands the doom. You must have known that I'll find the last of you refugees. He hisses, his fierce tone swiftly giving way to a sinister grin. Give me the book so you can have the rest you so desperately seek. You have no hope of denying me. Our past encounters are proof of that. You realise that the spirit standing before Gargomak is the ghost of Beric, the master mage whose treasures, according to Komorek, the vile Tazal has been seeking. Gargomak, his yellow eyes suddenly blazing with rage, angrily repeats his demand. The apparition of Beric appears to laugh, but no sound escapes from his glowing mouth. You immediately sense the ghost of the long-dead mage is speaking telepathically with Tazal. The grim sneer spreading across Gargomak's face suggests the reptilian does not like what he's hearing. A bright white light suddenly begins seeping through the many jagged cracks, riddling the surface of the stone spear. Powerless am I, hisses the Tazal. I've already snared your the treasures. You must do well to realize it's you that dwell among the dread. It's you who is without power. Gargomak stretches out his clawed hands, and the spirit of Grimak immediately recoils as the phantasmal gloom, whom touched in his ghostly hand, begins to assume a physical form. Oh no! That means that Gargomak will be able to read it. You're even weaker than when last we met, Gargomak. Slip back into the shadows and give my regards to the ghouls. You realise that unless you act quickly, the Tazal mage likely lays hand upon the book in just a matter of moments. So I can remain where I am, but I think that would be bad news for everyone. So heal myself a bit and intervene and attack Gargomak. Your swift and sudden attack takes Gargomak completely by surprise. A death blow to the back of his skull sends him reeling. He topples to the left and lands in a heap at the base of the wall. The apparition of Beric, the sorcerer of those most obscure secrets of Arcanum, are hidden within the depths of the ruins, turns to you as he draws the book to his chest. Destroy the spear, he intones in a wispy voice in your mind. Destroy it now.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Face ruin. Destroy it. Your eyes are immediately drawn to the large stone orb, the very object over which the Tsar mage was working his strange and powerful magic. You can only conclude that by destroying the stone, as the spirit of Beric has instructed, you will prevent Gargomak from gaining what he seeks. A vicious hiss to your left spins your head in the direction of the sound. There. The red-scaled reptilian struggles to pull himself upright. You realise that if you've got to take action, you must do so at once. So I can attempt to destroy the stone orb, or not, for some reason. Not sure why you would keep it around. I mean, maybe you want to read the book, but I don't know. It's just seems one of those secrets that you just don't, just too risky to keep around. Okay, attempting to destroy the stone orb. You step forward and deal a heavy blow to the stone orb. The cracks whittling the outer shell of the spear lengthen and widen as long tines of golden energy erupt from the core of the stone globe. Gargranak, still recovering from the surprise attack, cowers against the wall, shield himself from the deadly energy now arcing out of the orb and filling the passage. With the Tazar mage currently held at bay, you heed the words of the spirit of Beric and renew your attack on the orb, determined to destroy the stone. Alright, I'm fighting a stone orb. You swing your club. Long tines of golden energy erupt from the orb. This is a 3+ fight because it's something you're supposed to fight. And slain. 19 XP. A blinding flash of white light floods the passage as the orb suddenly shatters. Long tines of golden energy erupt from the dispersing core of the destroyed spear, deflecting off the passage walls as they streak out of sight into the gloom. Gargranak, having recovered from your attack, slithers into the centre of the corridor and spins to face you. The vile reptilian mage, his broad face heaving rapidly, snarls as he levers a claw-tipped finger at you. You ought to choose your allies with just a bit more care, he snarls, now brandishing his heavy double-bladed axe. Who would have believed that wretched cat would so quickly found a feeble mind poison with his lies. Heeding the words of Camelwack, you step boldly forward, prepared to engage the Tuzzle Mage, according to what the imprisoned Camelwack told you. Gargranext. Acquisition of the tome's power would prove disastrous, not only for this world, his world, perhaps this one as well. Well, okay, from what we've seen, he definitely has a lot of behaviour that indicates he's a bad guy. He's been recklessly throwing away his minions, trying to attack those almost unbeatable stone statues. Okay, admit, maybe one of them being wrecked? Okay, you wouldn't know the first time. That can happen. But two? You having two groups slaughtered by them? No, that means you're just throwing your men away. And imprisoned Kalamorek in, well, let's see, not in ways that would violate all sorts of human rights. You've taken less than 3 steps towards the axe-wielding Tazar when he removes his left hand from the shaft of the axe and makes a strange gesture. Gargranak's body shimmers brightly for a moment and then vanishes. The reptilian mage is now invisible. Well, that's unfair. Actually, it's completely... fair doesn't matter. It's to the death. Without warning, something cuts through the air only inches from his face. You stumble backwards and draw yourself into a defensive stance as you attempt to fend off the frenzied attack of your invisible foe. Alright, pick your number. Bonus, 50. 20 from agility, 20 from body, 10 from luck. Gotta get 75 or more or I get axed. Pick now. 97, success. You nimbly and inexplicably dodge several swipes of the invisible Tarzal's unseen blade, but presumably you can still hear it because it's a very, very big axe. Unnerved by the speed and ferocity of attacks, you fall back several feet, your mind racing as you hopefully attempt to determine your best course of action. Suddenly, the square copper medallion is torn from your grasp by an invisible hand. Now you'll be not so quick to run, hisses Gargomok from somewhere in front of you. Prove to me your mettle, and I might not leave you here for the dead. Having come to the horrifying realization, you cannot hope to fight, much less defeat Gargrenach while he remains invisible. You immediately turn and take flight, hurriedly running along the dimly lit passage as fast as your weary legs will allow. The harsh, sinister echo of the Tzar mage's hisses, coupled with the sound of his scaly bulk sliding along the floor, tells you the vicious creature is not far behind. But admittedly, that is probably better than him being utterly silent as well. Because then you'd just be terrified all the time, forever. Because you'd never know, even when you've escaped the dungeon, even when you're on another part of the kingdom, you never know. Is he still chasing me? Is he going to wait until one moment, several years in the future, when I finally let down my guard and just lop off my head? Would he? Probably. Well, maybe. Well, we don't know. He's probably doing other things as well. He's got. I know an entire genocide to oversee. So it's not like he can just that. Those types of things take a lot of planning. All right. Gargrenach's wasping hisses echo out of the gloom behind you as the vicious Tzar's continues his dogged pursuit. Okay, I'm in the southwest corner of the eight-shaped half of the northeast section. Alright, there's something in the northwest corner that seems to be my best chance to find something. What's here? A ring of engraved images adorns the floor here. The images depict a mountain, a sword, a dragon, a shield, a home, a star, and a moon. Step onto the engraved ring. You quickly step onto the engraved ring, but nothing happens. Not wishing to waste even another moment here, with the invisible Gargrenach still bearing down on you, you again set off in flight. Okay, I'm going quickly. Okay, there seems to be nothing I can do there. Gargrenach's rasping hisses echo out of the gloom behind you as the vicious Tzar continues in this dogged pursuit. All right, northeast corner. All right, and the crumbling statue of an armoured man, his oversized hand clutching a long staff, stands against the west wall in this section of the corridor. A thick cloud of blue dust surrounds the lifelike sculpture. Wait, dust? That could come in handy. As you draw closer to the statue, a cloud of dust drifts out towards the centre of the passage, as if attempting to envelop you. You notice some of the dust sticks readily to your attire. Would it stick to Gargrenach, perhaps? Is, of course, what you've already realised, suddenly. A grim hiss suddenly erupts from behind you. Fearing that Gargrenach is close to overtaking you, you spin around and assume a combat-ready stance, prepared to defend yourself against the impending attack of the invisible Tzazel. Now, I wonder, was this statue specifically put in place to defend against Gargrenach? Now, because we know Thalbert Berek has been fighting Gargrenach for his entire life and quite a bit beyond. So, now, people are going to be fighting him in here, it was quite likely. Okay, now we can't just leave the dust around. We have to be triggered by someone getting close. Okay, well, I've made these four statues for just fighting things. They'll, you know, if he's stupid enough to have them thrown away attacking them, which he will be, because he's... Yes, okay, we make this statue. Whenever someone gets close, it just reveals dust. Along the passage, however, is a sight that brings you a small measure of relief and presents you with a sliver of hope. Less than 10 yards away, emerging from the cloud of blue dusk through which you passed only moments ago, is Gargrenach, the fearsome Tzar, who, still invisible, is now covered with a fine coating of strange dust. So now I know where... whack it off in the case, because I'm wielding a club. You boldly hold your ground, waiting for your chance to strike. This is Gragwinoc. Okay, I can kill him or subdue him. Kamoek has told me that if I subdue him, he'll just go back to being... He won't stop. He won't learn his lesson, and he will go right back to trying to kill people. All the people. Well, all the cat people of Kamoek's nation, anyway. And then presumably he'll move on to another nearby nation, because you're conquering, it's kind of addictive. You can't... It's like Pringles, you can't just have one. You gotta, I gotta conquer these people. Ooh, I gotta conquer these people. Ooh, another one. And then you try to conquer too much, and you bite off more than you can chew, and you get this huge alliance of people that come together and stop you. Or you die, and then there's a massive civil war, and maybe... maybe your empire survives that, maybe it doesn't. It's about 50-50, really. Alright, well, anyway. Gotta kill him, because he will not stop. He won't. Also, I know he won't stop, because in a previous attempt, I tried to subdue him, and he just went off to kill me again. You can hear that in the previous version of this episode, which is somewhere. Just search the Thalberic or Snake Man or something. You'll probably find it. Kill your enemy. The Tazal Mage hacks at you with his axe. Alright, he's a 3+, because his main advantage was the whole turning invisible thing. And now he is slain. 38 XP. Gragwinoc sinks to the floor, landing face first in a broadening pool of his thick, dark blood. The reptilian mage, now forever beyond recall, unless he knows some very skilled necromancers, which I wouldn't put past him, emits a final ragged gasp and expires. His yellow eyes reflexively narrow to thin, black slits. A quick search of Gragwinoc's body reveals 2 square copper medallions. One of the medallions is a piece that was torn from your grasp only moments after it became invisible. The 2 medallions both appear to be identical. You promptly take possession of both. I've got 2 square copper medallions. And that it's the same description as it was when I last got it in the previous episode. Oh, actually, I'll read it again. You discover this square copper medallion around the neck of the world Tazal and Gragwinoc you killed in the underground ruins of an ancient tower in Northwest Ireland. The iron medallion hangs on a thick iron chain. Now, I'll maybe consider if you've killed Gragwinoc or defeated him. Yeah, I'll probably put defeat because you can subdue him and still get the medallions because he's unconscious. What's he going to do? So, yes, you found a second medallion. You found a second medallion from... You took a second medallion from Gragwinoc after you defeated him. Maybe I'd put that in. Maybe that's difficult. Also, this is an old adventure. No point going back to it, really. Gragwinoc's fearsome axe, a heavy double-bladed weapon, lies against a wall, less than a foot from his outstretched hand. After examining the axe, you decide to take it with him. It's an unidentified axe. It is unidentified, but it currently has a melee rating of 5. This double-bladed axe, its thick haft engraved with flames, is the weapon you took from the Tazal mage Gragwinoc, the very weapon he wielded against you in the ruins of Thalberic. This weapon is of magical quality, which of course it is. Now, it's got to be identified. I'll be doing that once I get out of the dungeon. Confident you haven't missed anything, you thoroughly check over your equipment before preparing to once again set off on your way. Suddenly, a violent shudder runs along the length of the corridor, nearly shaking you off your feet. Before you've managed to steady yourself, a series of loud grunts, joined in a deafening chorus by the sound of splintering stone, echoes all around you. Your mind races as several more shudders tear through the passage. The wall to your left cracks and buckles as large chunks of stone drop from the ceiling of the corridor, shattering as they strike the quaking floor. Alright, this seems to be another one of those dungeons that just falls apart as soon as you've done it for some reason. I'm not sure why. I mean, it wasn't like it started falling apart once you destroyed the orb, which would at least be something you could plan in. You destroy the stone, mate, and then presumably that is to take the book. To ensure that no one can escape with the book unless he's given them permission. But after defeating Gargronak, that doesn't make sense. Unless he's such a powerful mage that all the magical mojo leaking out of him wrecked the dungeon. Yeah, I'm going to say that. The underground levels of these tower ruins have started to collapse, and that's a very bad thing because I'd probably several hundred feet down by now. And I'd be totally crushed, and no one will ever find me. Well, maybe not ever, but it's incredibly unlikely. And even if it does happen, it'll be a long, long time in the future. You hurry along the corridor, momentarily uncertain of your direction, as you attempt to gather your bearings and decide upon a course of action that would hopefully lead you safely out of the ruins. You only just nimbly and narrowly sidestepped a chunk of stone when a shuddering tremor tears through the passage, instantly knocking you off your feet. Struggling to return to your feet, you're startled when the wall to your left cracks, buckles, and then crumbles, revealing wide, jagged mouth of a cave tunnel. Well, that's handy. Realising the cave passage may likely lead to the surface, and at the very least to offer some protection against the violent calamity befalling the tower ruins, you immediately rush toward it, only to have your mind suddenly plagued by images of the imprisoned Camrock mage Camelwek. Though you're not certain whether or not he's still alive, or if you can reach him in time, the thought of leaving him trapped in his cell as these ancient halls crumble into ruin is a notion you find troubling. Alright, so I could leave him to die. Well, okay, admittedly the barrier probably went down when Gargoyle died, but he probably needs to be woke up so he knows he can escape. Okay, I'm going to go back for him because I happen to know in games they don't make it so if you do the moral but risky thing you die. It's because that's just disappointing. Okay, I'm going to go back for Camelwek. Without a second thought, you set off through the collapsing ruins in a bold attempt to reach Gargronak's forgotten prisoner, the Camelwek mage, Camelwek. Okay, making my way. Violent tremors shake the passage, chunks of stone top into the corridor, both before and behind you. Alright, I don't have that much time, although I suspect they haven't actually programmed in a you get X amount of moves and then and after that there's increasingly difficult checks that do increasing damage to you until you finally get crushed. That's something that he could do, but I don't think he would. Well, who knows? Go south. Suddenly, another tremor shakes the passage, nearly bouncing off your feet. As you struggle to maintain your balance, you're suddenly aware of a faint, white glow stabbing through the shadows on your right. You instinctively turn towards the light, only to find yourself face to face with the ghostly apparition of Broek. The image of the elderly mage motions for you to approach as he splays the fingers on his left hand and touches the wall. Without a sound, the silver-rimmed void suddenly appears against the cold, damp stone. Well, that's... Alright, okay, so that's his defence. apparently he's the only one that can let people out again, or at least with the dungeon in this state. "Hurry from here," whispers a kindly voice as his echoes do your thoughts. "The one for whom you've come back is yet alive. Woo! The last of these accursed towers is doomed to fall. It shall become my tomb. Do not let it become yours." Before you can attempt to respond, the image of Borek fades and vanishes, leaving you alone in the quaking, dimly lit corridor. As yet another violent shudder runs through your feet, opening a sizable crack in the floor, you rush forward and leap into the portal. The magical gate closes at your heels as you tumble headlong into a frozen void. Without warning, the void surrounding you vanishes, and you find you're once again standing in a dimly lit passageway. Somewhere in the shaking depths of the ruined tower, presumably near Camelwreck, because Borek is presumably very good at gating, because, you know, Master Mage. As you attempt to gather your bearings, the haunting final words of Borek push to you forward your thoughts. "It shall be my tomb. Don't let it become yours." Realising you must make haste if you're to find your way back to Camelwreck and escape from here alive, you promptly set off along the corridor. Okay, I'm in the eastern part. This is the area just after where Camelwreck is. Alright, making my way southwest. I was on the northern part of this section. Okay, and southwest. Let's ascend the stairs. And, alright, and there's a low rumble from somewhere overhead. Swiftly builds into Kenofka's war. The ceiling of the passage is collapsing, sending a deadly deluge of stone and debris upon you. So I can dodge it, or use fortification. Well, fortification, of course. It succeeded. 16 experience to fortification. Without a second to spare, you manage to channel your powers of fortification, and a broad arc of green sparkles appear over you. The plummeting debris smashes into your magical barrier before sliding off onto the floor of the passage. Protected by the sparkling field, you make a hasty retreat to the west. Alright, that section is now completely impassable. I'll just have to go round on the south side. Okay, and I'm on the southeast corner of the southeast section, as southeast as you can go. Violent tremors still shake the passage as chunks of stone topple into the corridor both before and behind you. Alright, and bathed in sweat and nearly out of breath from your swift and dangerous ascent through the collapsing ruins, you at last draw up to the cell holding Camelwreck. A long row of iron bars that once separated the small chamber from the passage is gone. Yep, the bars disappeared when Gargomek died. I guess that's just Gargomek's way to discourage assassins, because hey, if you kill me, all these crazy psychopaths that I've had imprisoned will suddenly be free. And honestly, most of them hate you because you're all scheming against each other constantly. Slumped against the back wall of the cell, his chin resting against his chest, is the catawog rage you've returned to rescue. Camelwreck struggles to raise his head as you approach. He fixes you with a blank stare as you kneel to his side, as if he doesn't quite recognise you. Yes, of course, he says, his voice trailing away to a whisper as he leans his head back from me. I didn't think you'd come back for me. Or if you were still alive. And below, what did you find? A violent tremor shakes the cell and the passage. With one hand, you grasp the wall and steady yourself. With the other, you take hold of Camelwreck's shoulder, keeping upright as your quaking continues for nearly a minute. I guess Sir Croakington has just grew bigger to help with this. When the tremors momentarily subside, the Kassenbach surprises you by slowly rising to your feet. "What of below?" he asks again as he leans against you for support. He listens with great interest as you quickly describe to him your encounter with the axe-wielding Jazar and the ghost of Borek. He asks you a few questions about the tone carried by Grek's bits, for the main line of inquiry involves the fate of Gargrenek. When you tell him that Sazor Mage is dead, a look of extreme relief passes over his weary countenance. Over's missing out the V. Well, that happens. When you write millions of words, you kill them. Some of them are going to have typos. It's just the laws of probability. Especially when you don't, you know, have edit. You don't have an editing staff to check over these things. He nods and attempts to straighten himself up. You sense that a massive weight, a source of extreme anguish, has at last been removed from his shoulders. "What is there for me to say, except thank you," he says. "Come now, we may have just enough time to get us out of here before it all comes down upon us." Kalkumwek asks you to help him onto the passage. Once outside the stair, standing in the middle of the corridor, the Kalkumwek Age asks if you still possess the square medallion. When you show him the two identical medallions you're carrying, he has to have both. Well, it looks like we're not going to be able to keep them. When you hand him the two medallions, he immediately places them on the floor. Then he holds both hands over the object and closes his eyes. A low hum rises into the air as the faint white glow emanates from the medallions. "Allow me just a moment," he says, his eyes momentarily darkened to you. "There is just enough power in this pair to do what I can no longer hope to do on my own. I need just a few moments." Suddenly, a violent tremor shakes the passage. Kalkumwek stumbles back into the wall and you nearly topple over, only to catch yourself at the last possible instant. It's a lot easier when you've got a very low centre of gravity. Feeling this has been hurt, you quickly move towards him, only to freeze and stare in wide-eyed horror. Wide-eyed surprise, not horror, this is a good thing, as two black portals appear in the centre of the corridor, hovering above the two copper medallions. The Kassenbach waves, his expression lingering somewhere between a satisfied smile and an awkward grimace, waves his hand in the direction of the two magical gates. "The one on the right is yours," he says. With Kalkumwek leaning against you to steady himself, you step towards the two portals. Kalkumwek tells you the portal on the right will take you safely out of the ruins. "The portal on the left," he says, "will take him home, where presumably, if anyone can help him, they can. There are many of my kin who would not consider thanking you for all that you've done," he says. "It is, I'm afraid, their way. I'm grateful, however, that it is not mine. It has taken me most of my life that both friends and enemies are earned commodities, sometimes earned upon the same breath. I'm honoured to have known you, even for such a small while. Thank you for all that you've done." Kalkumwek, moving unsteadily, gives you a nod and steps towards the portals. "You must not tarry here. The gates will soon devour the magic in those medallions and close. Farewell, Sir Croakington, and safe travels." Kalkumwek steps up to the port on the left and pauses. For he notices to be stronger than he was only a few minutes ago. His unsteady movement and waggy breaths leads you to believe that he continues to suffer the effects of his ill treatment at the hand of his cruel captors. Without looking back, the Kassenbach mage steps into the portal and immediately vanishes into its dark, churning core. "Farewell, Kalkumwek. Farewell indeed." In the same instant, a pair of shuddering tremors shake the passage. Struggling to maintain your footing, you rush forward on the portal to your right. And stumble into the gasping maw of the silent, gaping maw of the silent, magical gate. Ooh, we've passed an hour. For what seems like several minutes, you stumble headlong through a silent, lightless void, losing all sense of direction as you plummet into nothingness. Then, without warning. Your surroundings instantly change, and you find you're now standing on a firm patch of ground beneath a bright afternoon sky, only a few dozen yards east of the tower ruins. After making certain you're alone here, you cautiously make your way over to investigate the stairs leading down into the lower levels of the ancient tower. You discover that the stairway that used to descend into the ruins is now filled with earth and wobble. It is no longer possible to enter the lower reaches of Thalberec. Right. Okay, then. If there is anything down there, it's gone. It's going to be ridiculously difficult to find anything in there. I mean, even if you have, miners, it would be difficult because it's a really deep dungeon. After briefly scouring the immediate area, you promptly set off and away from the ruins, eager to make your way back to the small boat and return to Evermark. Okay, we're back to just exploring Hawkwest Island. Don't want to do that. Take the boat back to Evermark. You take Yersinia's sturdy boat back across the lake and arrive safely, but exhausted, even more so, on the stony shore near her small ramshackle hut. Return to Evermark. Late afternoon on the day of your hasty escape from Thalberec and subsequent return to Evermark. The common moon of the Beast Den, Evermark's renowned tavern. It's as crowding and bustling as you've ever seen it. You've been seated against a table against the back wall, basking in the flickering glow of the tavern's crackling fire, a captive but willing audience to the jovial din that echoes through the timber rafters of Gin and Estler's thriving establishment. And that thriving is quite a lot thanks to Sir Croakington's effort. You're about to call for some more ale, somewhat doubtful you'll be heard above the ceaseless glowing clamour, when a frothing tankard lands in front of you. Gripping the tall vessel is a weathered, thick-fingered hand. As the hand swiftly withdraws, you look up to find the smiling face of Hodmir staring back at you. "I believe that's fair enough for a bit of a tale," he says, as he and the four men quickly fill the vacant seats across the table. "So you've been out to Hawkwest, or so we hear. What about it, then? Any sizzle?" "Come on, now. I don't want a spindly story either. What have you got?" You thank him for the ale, take a small sip of the warm, creamy brew, as you contemplate how you respond to the inquiry. Each of the five men at the table fixes you with an expectant gaze. "So I can tell him the story, tell him there were no Tazal, or make up something outlandish. You know what? Tell them the whole story. Camorek deserves to have people know that ultimately he saved the world. Well, his world. Even if, admittedly, a main reason why it was in peril was because of him. But still, he fixed it. He fixed it, and eventually, Gargranak would have got past that. Would have just got the white passage to, got the white symbol of sequences to get forward just by just trying everything. Because there are only millions of combinations, not billions. Tell them the whole story. Then it is all what I expected. Every last bit of it. Well done." Hobmir sits back and strokes his chin as he calls for more ale. There are other men seated round the table, their eyes wide, as they struggle to comprehend the enormity of your account. Immediately congratulate you on having made it back to Evermark alive. You spend the next small while answering a slew of questions from the fisherman and his cohorts, most of which involve your escape from the collapsing ruins. Well, you won't find me anywhere near that island from now on. Looks like June might have been right after all, he says, saying something was odd about that island, says Hopmeyer, suddenly deciding he no longer wants the ale for which he's called. He picks up the flagon and sets it down in front of you, next to the one he gave you only a small while ago, and then politely excuses himself. Long day ahead tomorrow. The sooner I'm off to bed, the sooner I'll be on the water tomorrow morning, and the sooner the blue sawfin will have reason to fret. The fisherman bids you farewell, and he and the members of his small crew rise and make their way out of the tavern. As Hobmere and the others depart, you rise, also preparing to leave, only to find yourself suddenly confronted by Jern Hartherim, the tall, pleasant man, who always seems just a bit out of place in his own establishment, smiles, and admits to having overheard the account you gave to Hobmere. I don't suppose, even for a moment, you expect me to believe what Hobmere so readily swallowed, he says in a friendly tone, smiling broadly. Maybe someday I'll get the real story out of you. I know there is something odd about this island. In fact, it's one of the reasons we came here. Enough about it for now, though. Before you can converse with him further, Durin hurries off across the room, joining Edessa in one of the many labours that see Frit to confront the couple at almost every turn in the Beast's Den. You're about to follow in the footsteps of Povmir and his crew, and make your way outside when your eyes are suddenly drawn to two full tankards resting on a table from which you've just risen. Content, at least for the next small while, to discard any thoughts of a more pressing nature, you retake your seat and stretch out your legs beneath the table. With your eyes wandering across the bustling common room, you take hold of the flagon and settle back to enjoy the myriad of scenes unfolding around you. As you sit alone at the table, enjoying both the den's potent brew and the pleasant, almost melodic murmur rising out of the tavern's high-spirited throng, now and again your eyes drift over to a pair of wide windows that look out onto the narrow lane. There, the lengthening shadows of a rapidly waning dusk began to meld into the blanket of doom, now swiftly and evenly draping itself over the lake, the town, and all the North Broadlands. Quite unconcerned with the jovial bustle and lonely but inviting glow spilling out of the Beast's Den, night quietly descends upon Edmark. And that finishes this adventure with 2,048 experience to general and 128 experience to all skills and powers. Was anything else unlocked? I don't think so. No, nothing seems new here. Just 9 adventures. All right, what shall we do next? All right, we'll go to Blade Square and do the Swindler's Den. It's been there for a long time. You might as well do it now. And I think I'll look around Twitter to see if there's any other adventures that I've missed. But anyway, until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.